This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman. Howard Wilkinson is off today. CSI and other police dramas on TV brought the mostly behind-the-scenes work of a crime lab into the spotlight and painted it with a glamorous and exciting brush. But while forensic science is a vital aspect of solving crime, the work performed by toxicologists, firearms experts, DNA analysts, and other scientists in Real Crime Lab, somewhat very different than what's being portrayed on primetime television. Joining me to discuss how the Hamilton County Crime Lab operates is County Coroner Dr. Lakshmi Sammarco. And you can join our conversation. The number is 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. You'll also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. Dr. Sammarco, thanks for being here this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about the current crime lab. When was it built and where is it located?
Well, the crime lab was built approximately 42 years ago. Dr. Frank Cleveland was the coroner at the time. And I was still a baby. No, I'm just kidding. It's right across the street from University Hospital, and it's a big brown building with no windows except in the stairways.
And that's also where that's the crime lab, and it's also the county coroner's office.
Right. It's the morgue and the county morgue and the crime lab.
So 42 years old, a lot has changed in the last 42 years when it comes to science. And obviously, you've been talking about, others have been talking about, the crime lab has some shortcomings.
You know, when the building was built, it was adequate for what was needed at that time, 42 years ago. Cincinnati was a lot smaller, you know, smaller population, smaller area-wise, fewer crimes, and it was at a time when, and I think the vision was, is that the city's growing and we really need to have our own crime lab. And as the city has grown, we've seen that that has been an integral part of law enforcement here and as well as helping the prosecutor's office. So I think the vision was great for that time. It was perfect. It was the size that it needed to be. The building was built to house about half the number of people that are actually working there. And so, yes, I mean, along the way, technologies have changed, things that couldn't have been anticipated 40 years ago. We didn't do DNA analysis 40 years ago. We only started doing DNA analysis in Cincinnati in 1999. So that's a whole division of the crime lab that was never planned for. And so our four master's degree DNA analysts that are outstanding are working in very cramped quarters. And then the equipment itself is very large, takes up a lot of space. And I know you've probably heard this before, but takes up a lot of electricity. Well, that's one of the limitations in the building is our circuits are maxed out. And so sometimes when we have to plug a new piece of equipment in, we have to unplug something else. And it's not just the coffee pot.
And I think maybe it was a newspaper article, TV reports, you actually have some equipment, some staff working for space in the hallways of the building.
Yeah, we do. We have some microscopes in the hallways and the work tables and their benches and their stools. And they are. I mean, if you on the third floor, when you come out of the elevator and turn left where the evidence collection and the evidence desk is, and you look to the left, there are two microscopes in the hallways with people working. We also have, in the DNA section in particular, when we got a fourth DNA analyst, there was nowhere to put her. There wasn't any bench space on the counter or, you know, where she could put her legs in. So we actually had to take all the drawers out of one section of the bench, the workbench, and then cover up the ends of those metal tracks and the wheels with packing tape so that it wouldn't snag her clothes. And she's skinny enough that, you know, her legs actually fit in that space. But that was jerry-rigged space. That wasn't meant for another scientist to be there.
And you talk about the staffing. How many people do you have working in this building currently?
Total about 50. And that includes the morgue section as well as the crime lab.
And I think, have you been downsized any with the county's budget cuts?
We actually lost several people over the last few years because of the lack of the raises, as well as the not so great picture that the county was projecting overall, and the downsizing. So we did lose some people. We're actually, according to a report that was done in 2011 that was commissioned by the commissioners, Hamilton County commissioners, we're currently 14 full-time people understaffed compared to the volume that we actually handle. So we can't really afford to downsize anymore. And we have people that overlap in different sections that do two, three different types of things, just because we do have to make do.
How many cases do you handle a year?
Well, it varies a little bit, because sometimes we're asked to do outside cases, or sometimes we're asked to help the state crime lab. But 2013, we did 11,844 cases.
So about 12,000.
Yeah. And the year before is 12,000, I think. In 2010, we did about 15,000 cases. That had, I think we did a lot of those for the state, too.
And are those primarily for agencies in Hamilton County? I know you said you had outside, but
predominantly,
most of
them. Yes.
Now, I know, used to be, I live east in Brown County. Brown County's autopsies used to come to Hamilton County. They now go to Montgomery County. Was that because you didn't have the capacity to do that, or was it a pricing thing where it was cheaper for Brown County to go to Montgomery County?
We're pricing-wise, we're equivalent pretty much to Montgomery County. I think it's a relationship establishment between the Brown County coroner at that time and the current Montgomery County coroner. For example, the Warren County coroner actually works for Montgomery County coroner's office as a pathologist. So they have a relationship then. And then he sometimes substitutes in at Butler County as well. So it's a matter of relationships and where you feel comfortable. We're more than happy to provide the service for our eastern neighbors. We do about, last year we did 935 autopsies in our office. We max out at 1,000, and that's because we're certified by the National Association of Medical Examiners, and they put what they consider guidelines or limits out there for pathologists, and they say 250 per pathologist, and we have four pathologists.
With the number of cases that you handle, what kind of is there a backlog on turning around this evidence for these police agencies?
There has been a backlog, I think, for many years. And depending on which section you're talking about, a lot of times they've been understaffed. For example, when I first started, we only had two firearms people. And we really needed four to be fully staffed. And the year before I had started, apparently, we only had one firearms person for quite a long time. So you can imagine just trying to keep up with the live cases and the cases that need attention that are going to court. They absolutely have to be able to process the evidence and make it to a court date. So that's always priority, is making it to a court date. And we've never missed a court date in our crime lab, not for any section, no matter how understaffed we've been. So, yeah, that means that the cases that aren't identified as immediate or urgent or necessary immediately have been put aside to do the more urgent work. And so there's been a backlog. And we've been whittling down the backlog now that we actually have four firearms people working.
Do you charge for your services? I'm thinking, let's say Cincinnati has a homicide case, and you're obviously called to the scene, retrieve the body, do your autopsy, your investigation. Is that something then that you charge back to the city of Cincinnati, or is that just something that's covered by the county taxpayers?
Right. Any jurisdiction within Hamilton County gets our services for free, with the exception of drugs. And the reason for that is that we have a rapid indictment process for drugs in Hamilton County, which require us to provide the service more quickly, which means more chemicals have to be used. And we can't be as efficient at batch service as we can in some of the other sections. So for drugs, we actually do charge for that service. But otherwise, everything else is provided free. So autopsies, firearms, or DNA analysis, or trace evidence analysis, the arson team and the arson investigations, all of that is provided free for Hamilton County.
Can you take us through let's use a homicide case, for example. You get the call that Cincinnati has a homicide. What happens? How many people, who's the first on the scene? How many do you decide? How many does this get? One person, two people? Just take us through a typical case.
So when we get the phone call in our office, that means that a law enforcement division has already responded and identified that this was a suspected homicide. So then they make the call to us, and if it's during the day, we have investigators working at the desk answering the phone calls, and one of them will go out. If it's at night, our night person will contact the investigator on call. They'll respond. Now, if it's a homicide, there's usually two people respond, the investigator and one of our pathologists, one of our deputy coroners. And they'll go, and nobody is allowed to touch the body or the vicinity of the body or anything within the vicinity of the body until the coroner staff arrives. And they'll take photographs. They'll talk to law enforcement, find out what happened. They'll take photographs. They will check the body for ID. They will check the body for cell phones, et cetera. They'll try and get an idea of what happened based on the scene and the circumstances at the scene. And then they will arrange transport of the body to our office. And then if it's during the day, there's a good chance that the autopsy can be done at the same time. But usually it'll be done first thing in the morning. Most of the autopsies are done first thing in the morning.
And how long does a typical autopsy take?
Anywhere from 1 to 2 hours, depending on what the circumstances are and what you're looking for and how much in-depth organ investigation has to happen.
And I don't want to get too gory here with autopsy details, but is there a different standard for doing like an autopsy for someone who's been involved in a potential criminal act, as opposed to like a natural cause that, perhaps they were just found dead in their home and you need to do an autopsy to find out why they died?
A lot of the calls that we get are found at home, not known if there's anything suspicious, and we have to determine whether it's a case that needs to have an autopsy or not. So, for example, we probably get around 3,500 calls a year, so we're obviously not doing autopsies on everybody, and the vast majority of the cases are natural. And so it's up to the deputy coroner on call to listen to the circumstances, take a look, and see, is this something that we should do an autopsy on? Or we also have situations where we do what's called a view or a viewing of the body, and we may not do an autopsy at all. We may just view the body and look at the circumstances and determine whether we can just call this without having to do an autopsy. Sometimes, but usually when we do an autopsy, you're asking, is there a different standard for a homicide? No. If you're doing an autopsy, you're doing an autopsy.
An autopsy is an autopsy.
Exactly. So the same amount of attention is given to an autopsy, whether it's suspicious, criminal in nature, or not.
And sometimes those finding someone in their home, and I think part of what you weigh there is if they were under the care of a physician for something that would have caused their death.
Right. And, those people that have been under the care of a physician who have been known illnesses, 95-year-old found at home and fell and struck his or her head. And, you look at the circumstances, they had been on blood thinners, they had had strokes in the past or heart attacks in the past. And look at those. So you may choose not to do an autopsy in that situation and take a look and see, could this have been due to natural causes? So there's a lot that goes into making that decision.
Now, what if a family member in that situation, what are their rights to request an autopsy?
We always have a discussion if a family member has any question of suspicious activity, and they can always discuss it with the deputy coroners. And essentially, if they can provide something that makes the deputy coroner think that, maybe this was a poisoning, or maybe this was a suspicious death due to somebody striking him on the head, but that made it look like a head injury. I mean, there are circumstances that can happen like that. And after a discussion, if they feel that an autopsy needs to be done, then they'll do it.
We talk about, in the intro, I was talking about CSI and all these crime shows. Does that do a disservice to what you do at the crime lab?
Well, first of all, our scientists don't respond to the scenes. And I get that all the time. It's like, they're out there lifting them. No. Our scientists don't usually respond to the scenes. On very rare occasions, they might be asked to come to a scene. And a lot of times they will respond to the arson scenes, but not usually to the homicide scenes and the death scenes. So, yeah, that doesn't happen. The other thing is we don't usually solve the crime in 40 minutes, you know, minus commercials. That usually doesn't happen. We would love to say we can.
You'd be a hero.
Our people don't run around our spotless, spacious, absolutely tech-savvy and, you know, innovative crime lab in high heels and short skirts. That doesn't happen either, so.
So you can't take a drop of blood, put it on a slide and stick it in a computer, and then it starts flashing perfect match or something. That doesn't happen in real life.
Does not happen. We do take drops of blood and put it into a computer, but it usually takes a lot longer to get some answers.
That's one time when you talk about autopsy results. I know we get news releases from your office, especially on maybe some high profile cases, and you know you get a preliminary cause of death, but then you always say toxicology takes 6 to 8 weeks. And that's something I've always wondered. Why does toxicology take so long? And that's for things like drugs and alcohol and whatnot.
Well, if the analysis is completely done in-house, which a lot of our toxicology is done completely in-house, but there are some things that we have to send out for. So if, I mean, some of the more high-profile recent cases, we've had to send off a couple of things to labs that perform those tests that we don't. So, of course, we have to wait until they come back with that. We may have the alcohol results right away, but it's not a complete toxicology result because you're still waiting on some of the drug analysis. Why does it take so long? We have very few people, and we have equipment that ages or several. At any one time, you may find that one or two pieces of equipment that are integral to what we're doing are under service or taken apart and lying there in pieces on the bench when we're trying to figure out if we can get those fixed. So there are a lot of things that go into that. In a perfect world, you know, we'd have results back in 2 weeks. But I think laws of nature prevent that for some of the things. And then our staffing restrictions make it difficult.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking today with Hamilton County Coroner Dr. Lakshmi Sanmarco about the operation of the county's crime lab. If you have a question, 513-419-7100. You talk about your deputy coroners going to the scene. Do you go to scenes? And if so, do you do it often? Once in a while, how often do you go to a scene?
I do go to scenes. Sometimes it just depends on when it is and what scenes. Sometimes I'll get the phone call and say, oh, hey, they really want you out there, doc. Or they'll say, well, you might want to go out to this one. And usually I don't go to the suicide scenes, and I usually don't go to the overdose scenes. But there are circumstances when I will, and if I get, and that's sort of, you know, the investigators that go out and the deputy coroners that go out, and they might call, or I'll get a call from the office and say, you know what, I think I better go to that one, and I'll go. How often do I go? It really varies depending on the types of the death. Accidental versus, and I go out to accident scenes as well, so versus homicide. And of course, you know, more recently we've had a high profile parent suicide, and you know, went out to that scene, but it's not a normal circumstance.
Let's see, you were elected coroner, I hope I get this right, 2012.
That's right, November 2012.
So you took office, I would assume, January the 1st of...
Actually, I was appointed...
oh, that's right, and then you
I
ran.
I was appointed prior to that, all right.
So you've been on the job roughly 2 years, mm-hmm. 2.5 years?
2.5 years almost.
What things surprised you? What were some surprises? Maybe a surprise that you thought this going in, and now that you're actually coroner, gosh, that's surprising.
You know, it's funny because I didn't really know a lot of what happened in that office prior to going there. And like most people out in the community, whether you're a physician or not, most people are not familiar with what the coroner does, what the crime lab does, the collaboration between law enforcement and our office. I mean, none of that really is something that's advertised or, you know, put out there for the general public to know the types of deaths that are investigated, the number of suicides in our community. You know, number of suicides is greater than the number of homicides. And I think people always find that a difficult concept, but it really is. I mean, every year. And then the number of overdose deaths, especially this year. You know, those are all things that I probably didn't spend a great deal of time thinking about prior to taking the office, but those have been some of the surprises. And then the number of people that work in the office and what they do, the number of cases they can turn around, I mean, it's pretty phenomenal.
And I think I heard you say in another interview, hasn't the number of deaths from heroin spiked?
Yeah. Last year, 2013, we had approximately 189 heroin overdose deaths. And with out of a total of slightly over 220 for the county. And the year before, we had 126, I believe. And so that's a 50% increase in 1 year. So, yeah, I think that represents a pretty big spike.
We've been talking about from the beginning about the crime lab being 42 years old and looking to make changes. And recently, there's some hope now that you will be getting a new crime lab. The Hamilton County Commissioners did take possession or are about to take possession of the old Mercy Mount Airy Hospital, and part of that could be turned into a new crime lab for your office. How does that process work now? Again, I think I'm not sure they've closed on it yet, but they're working on getting possession. So once they get possession, what happens then to make part of that into a crime lab for your office?
Well, first of all, just getting the building was, I think, a really big and important part for Hamilton County.
And actually a money saver as opposed to having to build a new standalone building for the
Absolutely.
Crime lab.
So that crime lab design report from 2011 said to get an adequately sized building built from scratch for the crime lab and the coroner's office and the morgue division would be $56 million, which, you know, that was in 2011. So who knows what it would really cost now, right? So I started pestering a lot of business people, business leaders in the community. I think they got tired of hearing from me. Until one of them, and it was Mike Connolly from Catholic Health Partners, was explaining the woes of the crime lab to him one day. And he said, so what you need is a place for a new crime lab, right? And I said, yeah. He said, well, will an old hospital do? And I just looked at him. I said, are you offering me one? And he said, well, I've got two. He said, why don't you see if one of those would work for you? Would be, you know, I think Catholic Health Partners would be thrilled at the idea of having one of those being repurposed for a crime lab and morgue for you guys. So that's how the discussion started. What's the process? There have been all sorts of options. The figure that was put out there by the people hired by the county administrator to look into what the cost would be for renovation for just the crime lab portion, the figure that was put out there was $21.5 million. And so where do we come up with that money? What are the options? And that's what the county administrator does, is come up with, you know, how do you come up with the money for this? So initially, I think he had suggested a 0.25% sales tax. In 1 year, if they had a finite, limited 0.25% sales tax, 1 year would more than fund the crime lab renovation, just 1 year. Brand new renovation and move everybody in. 2 years would actually, if you had 2 years of a tax, would fund not only that, but we'd be able to make it a law enforcement campus and move some of the sheriff's divisions, fusion center, narcotics division, et cetera, et cetera, and renovate the jail for 240 more beds.
Just real quickly, what kind of best case scenario, when could this be available?
If I was doing it?
Yeah. When the fun, what kind of time frame?
I think they're looking at 2016 to 17. And
I've been talking with Hamilton County Coroner Dr. Lakshmi Sammarco about the operations at the county's crime lab. Thanks for joining me this afternoon. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website, wvxu.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our technical director was Bruce Ellis. I'm Jay Hanselman.